Introduction to Nutrigenetics and Nutrigenomics from the project Genomics in Medicine. The importance of diet and nutrients for human health and their role in human disease has been known to humankind since the ancient times. And also what has been known is the specific effects certain nutrients can have on specific people. So it was clear from the very beginning that not all people are the same. Now, when we have the human sequence and the possibilities of medical genomics at hand, of course there are approaches, or there is a push for utilizing that genomic knowledge in the field of nutrition. Therefore, the major practical translation of nutrition research to public health consists of defining the optimal dietary recommendations that would aim to prevent disease and to promote health for everybody for each stage of human life. However, these guidelines that are produced cannot work for everybody, because it follows from the genetic diversity of humankind that an individualization of these guidelines is necessary. Therefore, we always hear the terms personalized medicine or individualized medicine. This is where the genomic medicine is headed, or medical genomics if you want. Personalized medicine in terms of diagnostics, prognostics, and therapy. Of course, in all aspects of prevention and treatment of the diseases, combined nutrigenetic considerations will be necessary for prevention and eventual alleviation of already manifested disease. The mechanisms responsible for the inter-individual differences in dietary response are, as can be expected, very complex and therefore far from being fully understood. Nevertheless, the substantial role of genetic factors has been proposed many times and shown successfully, at least for rare inborn errors of metabolism, such as phenylketonuria, where, as you know, it's one of the prime examples of nutrigenetic interaction, where the presence of phenylalanine in the food or in the diet may, or even in the breast milk, may induce very severe damage to central nervous system of a newborn. And fortunately, this is also a prime example of a fully treatable nutrigenetic condition just by taking the phenylalanine containing foods off the diet of the baby prevents most, if not all, the symptoms of the disease. Therefore, the main goal of nutritional genomics is to find genetic markers that would reveal significant gene-diet interactions and so provide tools for personalized or individualized medicine and more successful dietary guidance and recommendations. nutritional genomics compared to pharmacogenomics is still a young field. Pharmacogenomics is around for more than 50 years. The nutritional genomics as such is just being born, because the International Society for Nutrigenetics has been established only several years ago. There has been first professional journal of nutrigenetics and nutrigenomics established, and it's might be a bit surprising on one hand, as not all people are taking medication, therefore are affected by pharmacogenomic field, but everybody has to eat, so in a sense everybody is a subject of a nutrigenetic interactions. However, the difficulties with the interpretation of nutrigenomic interactions led to this late or relatively late start of the whole field. While on the genetic side, our technology has evolved immensely, and perhaps even more than our statistical and other capabilities. So at the present time we are easily able to assess hundreds of thousands of DNA polymorphisms in a sample in the time frame of hours at a reasonable cost. However, the same is not true for the other part of the nutrigenetic equation, which is the dietary assessment, which unfortunately is still mostly done by self-reported dietary questionnaires with all the inherent complications that it might bring. So, to wrap up the introduction, what nutrigenetics and nutrigenomics does is that it studies inter-individual differences of reactions to given nutrients. In other words, it could also study why one of your colleagues is dining every night in a fast food restaurant and never gains weight, and the other is following a rational diet and keeps on putting on more and more kilos. There are several monogenic diseases that follow the nutrigenetic pattern. One of those I already mentioned is phenylketonuria. As already mentioned, phenylketonuria is an autosomal recessive disorder that results from phenylalanin hydroxylase deficiency. Phenylalanin is toxic to the brain, and if untreated, severe mental retardation occurs. Phenylketonuria is considered one of the first and best examples of gene-diet interactions, because the mental retardation in subjects with mutation in the PAH, phenylalanine hydroxylase gene, is completely preventable with dietary modification. PKU, phenylketonuria, is the most common inborn error of amino acid metabolism in Caucasians, with an average incidence of 1 over 10,000. This condition can be detected by measuring serum phenylalanine levels, and the detection of hyperphenylalaninemia is included in the newborn screening programs of most Western countries. A phenylalanine-restricted diet has been the mainstay for treatment for PKU. Currently, this intervention has the highest level of experimental evidence. Phenylalanine is an essential amino acid found in all protein foods, So implementing a phenylalanine-restricted diet after birth reduces blood phenylalanine concentrations and avoids the severe consequences of untreated PKU. There are other examples of monogenic nutrigenetic diseases such as galactosemia and lactose intolerance. For complex diseases or multifactorial diseases, of course, with the nutrients, obesity and diabetes, sometimes connected with metabolic syndrome, which is a combination of several metabolic disorders, is a prime example. The adoption of a modern Western urban lifestyle has been recently associated with a rapid increase in the prevalence of obesity and other civilization disorders. Today, about one-third of the population of many Western countries can be considered obese. Many developing countries are experiencing similar increases in obesity. That is more striking that in several developing countries, the undernutrition and obesity share the top 10 rank of causes of disease and death. The pace with which the obesity pandemic has occurred would suggest that a change in the environment is the likely cause, because one cannot presume that the genetic blueprint of humans would change so quickly, so the environment seems to be to blame. However, studies in twins and families support also the significance of the genes, because heritability still ranges between 0.46 and 0.8 according to one study. Remember, heritability means the proportion of genetic factors among other factors that cause a variation in a given trait. So 46% to 80% of genetics. Moreover, the degree of weight gain in response to overfeeding is usually highly correlated between pairs of twins. So this has led to the belief that chronic diseases such as obesity result as a consequence of a complex interaction between environment, which is abundance of supply of calories, and accompanied by the reduced physical activity, so hyperactive fork and hypoactive feet combination, and the genetic factors. In this context, hundreds of genes and variations have been proposed to be involved in nutrigenetic interactions, leading to greater accumulation of fat mass or other phenotypes connected to development of obesity. However, this is far beyond the scope of undergraduate introduction to nutrigenetics, so I will leave you at this point with the last comment regarding the thrifty genotype hypothesis. This hypothesis simply states that during human evolution, the favorable gene variants that facilitated survival in the conditions of a very irregular supply of food or water or other nutrients. So those variants that allowed people to survive, so they were the thrifty variants that enabled them to store the energy in the times of surplus so well that it was enough to survive the times of prolonged hunger or thirst. So those genes, or those variants of the genes, are present now in our genomes, because we are the descendants, the ones that did not have those thrifty genes, did not survive and did not have the chance to reproduce, or at least not to that extent as the thrifty gene carriers. So the theory goes that the current over availability of food combined with the thrifty genes equals the obesity and diabetes pandemics we are now witnessing. Whether this is a correct theory, it's still a question, it's still being discussed. However, it is one of the major theories underlying the current state that the clinicians see every day. Thank you for your attention.